Elchim Talks is produced by Legal & General Investment Management, providing you with the investment ideas we just can't stop talking about. This podcast assumes a certain level of knowledge of financial markets and is intended for investment professionals.
Hello and welcome to the latest podcast in our Elchim Talks. We're here today to look under the bonnet of the asset allocation team, to discuss the inner workings of the process and the challenges of working together as a team to come up with one view. We're going to focus on three big topics: the new political paradigm, our approach to tech, and the US dollar. I'm Chris Jeffrey. I'm joined today by Emil van den Heiligenberg, the head of the investment team, by Willem Kleinstra, an FX strategist, and by Hetal Mehta, our UK and European economist. Okay, so for those listeners who have the patience to stick with us to the end, we'll conclude with a quick fire quiz for our panelists. Before we get on to that, let's do the three themes in turn. So first, new political paradigm. Hetal, what do you understand by that theme? How would you describe it?
So for us, that theme, in broad terms, is really about the emergence of populism. It's something that we identified in 2016. And you know, it's also how the political response to that, and that for us would be manifested in trade wars, curbs on immigration, fiscal stimulus and nationalisation, amongst other things. We've also had, as part of that, a kind of prepare, not predict approach. People have been wrong-footed, particularly the experts since the Brexit referendum, when the polling was showing that it would be a Remain outcome and it wasn't. And so we now spend a lot of time looking at different scenarios, assigning probabilities, calculating probability weighted or fair value levels for key securities ahead of any risk events. And since then, we've had an Italian referendum, US elections, French elections, UK elections, and many other events. So as part of that, I've become quite good at drawing these elaborate probability trees now. But we also incorporate this theme in our scorecard, so it has a lot of influence on a number of our trades. And we've done a couple of trades directly on the back of this. And obviously Brexit is the key one that dominates our discussion, given our sensitivity to the pound. But we do keep an eye on all of the elections across Europe and elsewhere.
So as a UK and European economist, you know, your day job typically involves updating GDP and inflation forecasts. And then you get thrown this big curveball of let's think about the political risk. So how do you kind of process that very qualitative information alongside the very quantitative part of your job?
So it's a case of looking at a broad range of indicators. I think we've learned as economists, we're not experts in the political area, but we have to try and understand different sources. So it's not just looking at one set of opinion polls, but it's trying to look at a broad range of indicators and to some extent, backtesting their reliability over previous risk events.
Well, I mean, apparently we've had enough of experts in the UK, so that's not a problem. Willem, then I guess one of the ways that we can manifest expressions of kind of political risk is in the FX markets. Can you talk us through your thinking there?
Yeah, I think political risk typically it's like a macro event, and as such, it will have implications for currencies. But the way for me I look at political risk is that when there is a political risk, typically there is a political risk premium to be earned by taking exposure to certain currencies or other assets for that matter. If it's one political event, then because it's such a binary outcome, it's probably not interesting to invest in. But I think if you make it a theme where you try to have trades on many of those political events over time, then all of a sudden it becomes a quite interesting risk premium. But it does mean you need to do it on a consistent basis. And I think that's why it's interesting for us having the new political paradigm as a theme, because it helps us by trying to do this in a consistent way. So what often happens is that when there's a political event quite near to you, then sort of assets are affected by it. So what we need to do is we need to take a position beforehand, before the market is focusing on it. Clearly, Brexit had implications for sterling, and that's something we did quite actively we played it in an active way in our portfolios. When Trump was elected, you saw a clear impact on the Mexican peso, and again, we try to sort of earn that political risk premium. Because, yeah, currencies are impacted by those events. Typically what you see is that fear or greed, for that matter, affects those assets sort of beyond fair value. And that's what we're trying to do also within currency space.
So listeners with a good ear will have detected a Dutch accent in the studio. When it comes to political risks, we have to try very hard to separate our kind of own thoughts and emotions and beliefs from our kind of cold-hearted objective assessment of the potential market impact. Emil, as another Dutchman, and I guess particularly when thinking about the Brexit risk, when about the Italian risk, could you talk about that, how you achieve that separation?
Well, so I think thinking around political risk, the basically three points important, and both Hetal and Willem already sort of alluded to those points. It starts, I think, you can only make proper money on political risk and trading geopolitics if you plan. So Hetal already mentioned scenarios, but it's scenario building, it's models, it's beforehand starting to think about what are milestones to move from scenario A to scenario B, because it's very difficult that in the process itself, if you haven't thought about it before, if you haven't made those elaborate scenario diagrams like Hetal mentioned, to do that while you're in the process. Then it's very much you run the risk of sort of chasing the latest news and chasing the latest sentiment. So one is planning. The second one is allowing to specialize. What we realized, I think something which I'm pretty proud of, what we realized before Brexit, is that we would all become part-time specialists. Because we read in the FT, we watch the news, it is our friends, our mates talk about Brexit all the time. So we think that we get a view. What we did was basically you, Hetal, and you, Chris, to make you the specialist, meaning you would follow all the analysts, and you would talk to all the analysts we had available. You had primary access to policymakers and so on to become the specialist. Then also trust the specialist then, because what I read from the FT is much less deep and therefore probably already in the price. We had to trust you guys to sort of see where we differ from, let's say, consensus and so on. And then thirdly, I think, and then Willem alluded to that a little bit, is political developments have the tendency to be dramatically overpriced or underpriced at some point. There is lots of volatility around political events. And if you analyze lots of political events, then it pays off to go against the sell-off. Because the sell-off is very, very likely to be overdone. So what you analyze is the impact of the political event on earnings, on growth, on the quality of credit. And if those things are not too much impacted, you can sort of properly bet against a sell-off. So, yeah, for instance, in the night of Brexit, when we realized, we're all in the office, I remember, when we realized it would be a Brexit, we sold pounds. But then later on, when the pound was sold off, we realized this is probably a movement which is overdone. And it gave us a nice opportunity, A, to take profit on that position, but B, to also go to the other side to sort of, yeah, monetize that overexpression of risk in the market.
So I guess you kind of alluded to the Brexit example of being in a situation which had very fast-moving prices, very fast-moving developments on that night of the 26th of June a couple of years ago. But also we're now in a world where positions on trade policy, for example, can just change at the speed of a tweet. So as the kind of head of the team, how do you kind of think about reacting in terms of the way the process has evolved to that very fast-paced news?
That very much, in my view, depends on the market's reaction. I mean, yes, there's lots of day-to-day noise, and then, yeah, given that we are very passionate about our business, we talk a lot. Every morning meeting, we would talk about the ebbs and flows of the daily noise. But it's much more than sort of seeing it in conjunction with price movements. And yeah, we've occasionally been surprised by the lack of impact, for instance, of the daily noise in equity markets. But yeah, in the end, I think investors like us look through and look through fundamentals and see sort of like it doesn't have that much impact on earnings. It can have impact on growth, but that's probably 2019 story rather than a 2018 story. So that's sort of keeping a cool head and coldly analyze what is the underlying result on the fundamentals, rather than sort of let yourself be taken away by daily market sentiment.
I want to pivot a little bit now to talking from about the generic to some more specific examples. So Hetal, as a European economist, you've got a lot of countries to cover, a lot of regions to cover. I don't know whether you speak any Spanish.
Poco.
Very good. But I'm guessing you don't speak any Catalan. So we've taken positions in the last couple of years in Catalonian bonds. How do you get comfortable with understanding the fundamentals of a position like that when, you know, in the best world of the world, you cannot be as close to the issues as some of the local investors?
So you have to get closer to the experts. So in that situation, in the first instance, it's about looking at trying to speak to as many people as possible. Out there amongst people who provide research to us, there are those who are either living there or on the ground, or whether it's reading research from some specific agencies that do that kind of on the ground work for you. But then on top of that, it's also looking at the broader structure. So as an economist, you're always looking at how things slot into each other. So knowing that the Catalonian government is largely backstopped by the central government is really a framework for thinking about where the risks are capped. And so it's the combination of getting that on the ground information, but looking at the big picture in terms of the structure, and that's how you get comfortable.
Okay, so that's our first theme covered. The second one I want to move on to is tech. Over the last 5 years, the NASDAQ has outperformed US large cap equities by around 5.5% per annum. Our view on tech has been pretty neatly summarized by Lars in a 3-word blog title, I Like Tech. And then he had a follow-up 4-word blog title, I Still Like Tech. Emil, do you want to elaborate on those 3 or 4 words?
Yeah, I like tech as well.
No,
tech was something which we've been looking at for probably already more than a year, and because of the performance you just mentioned, it was difficult for us to engage. We like to be contrarian. We don't like positions which are liked by everyone else as well. I think that came across in the previous topic as well. And tech consistently comes across as almost the most liked sector. So we liked it, and we were regularly talking to our equity team about themes in tech and about why they like tech and why they are overweight in their portfolios in tech. And we were sort of almost waiting for a 5% drawdown to get engaged, or something like a 5% drawdown. It doesn't really matter that much. For instance, why we like tech? Well, first of all, it helps us. It's a late cycle theme. So tech as a sector used to do well in late cycle economy, and that's important because we believe, and we talk a lot about this in our blogs, that we are slowly but gradually moving late cycle. Tech is less dependent on labor, so is a bit more immune to wage growth. And there is a side of trade wars where tech is also a bit more immune to as well. Last thing, which we discussed around tech, was actually it was Anton, our CIO, who asked me to sort of challenge ourselves and come up with a bullish scenario. What could cause a, let's say, 1990s-like bullish scenario? And I thought, like it was in the 90s of the last decade, it could be tech again. Why? The retail investor is not really engaged in the equity market at the moment. If you want to create a bubble in the equity market, what's necessary is for the retail investor to become engaged. And the retail investor likes stories, likes a narrative. And tech is full of fantastic narratives. whether it's robotics, whether it's AI, whether it's cybersecurity or 3D printing, are all fascinating stories of companies which can do new stuff which wasn't possible or was not even perceived to be possible 5 to 10 years ago. So we're monitoring very closely what retail is doing, whether there is retail flow coming to the markets. So far not. But if retail is coming to the markets, I'm convinced they will buy into tech.
Okay, so topic number three is on the US dollar. Staying with you, Willem, could you just do a kind of quick introduction to this theme?
So I wrote a blog last year, which was four words, I need a dollar. So just staying sort of with the short titles. But everyone talks about a strong US dollar environment, and the market has been talking about it for years now. But the real US dollar rally took already place in 2014, so way before the Fed hiked rates for the first time at the end of 2015. And since it has moved sideways. So the market narrative for a strong US dollar is well known. A strong US economy, which is the furthest in the economic cycle, eroding spare capacity, leading to a tight labor market, eventually pushing up wages and inflation, which will force the Fed to continue tightening monetary policy, and more so in the US than in other markets or in other countries. So everyone is looking for a strong US dollar. But we know one thing for sure. If everyone likes something, then typically it doesn't happen, or at least the return potential or the sort of the appreciation we can see in the dollar will be quite limited. But there are also other reasons to like the US dollar, because we know that a strong US dollar in itself can cause global financial conditions to tighten. And that can affect emerging markets, and it can affect broader financial markets. So we know a strong US dollar can cause risky assets to sell off. So in any portfolio where you're long risky assets, and if you look at our multi-asset funds, typically we are long risky asset, it makes lots of sense being long the US dollar with it. Because the return potential may be limited, but it's a very good hedge. The problem with any hedge or with every hedge in your portfolio, the timing is difficult because risks are by nature very, very unpredictable. So there have been a number of times over the last few years where the dollar underperformed temporarily. And I had to write blogs to sort of defend sort of the investment case and that it's quite important to be disciplined and having a focus on say, a longer horizon. But that's the reason why we like to be long the US dollar, because we think it's a good hedge having in portfolios that are long risky assets. The same is true, for example, for US inflation, because even when we see a surprise higher in US inflation, that in itself can tie the hands of the Fed, that can upset financial markets, and that can upset risky assets as a consequence. So it makes sense, despite the fact that the return potential of this particular trade or view is limited, but from a risk perspective, it makes lots of sense having these kind of exposures in your portfolio.
So I think there's a really interesting kind of thing in the middle of that, that if we're thinking about trades from a return perspective, it's really easy to evaluate them ex post. They've either made money or they haven't made money. From a risk perspective, it can be quite hard to know whether something has been risk reducing or not. But Emil, kind of, how do you think about that? How do we think about sensibly evaluating the roles of those kinds of trades in portfolios, where they're there at least as much to generate a return as they are to reduce risk?
Yeah. You're right, of how to measure that success is really difficult. Before that, so I think I consider it was one of my key responsibilities, except managing the team, is also to manage the balance of risk and opportunity in the fund. So an easy example is if multiple risk takers at the same time sort of want to put on bullish trades, so basically making money when the market goes up, then I would consider it as my role to sort of step on the brakes and either make sure that we implement those positions smaller or that we look for trades which can help us when the market is trading bearish. If collectively trades are exposed to a certain risk, then I consider it my responsibilities, and you guys know this all too good. I would sort of bang the table and come up with, urge you guys to come up with trades which do particularly, they might do well, ideally they do well in the base case, but have a sort of extra focus on trades which would do well in that sort of more negative scenario. So that's sort of where you try to find trades which help you to balance the portfolio better, that it makes money in more and more scenarios. We in the process, we spend probably as much time on thinking about risk as we spend time on thinking about opportunities. How do you sort of measure the success of those trades? Well, yeah, what's the success of your fire insurance if you haven't been paid out of your fire insurance? You still must be pretty happy with that result. We obviously look for when an alternative scenario suddenly materializes, we then have a stark eye for, are those trades really performing? That can be really the scenario materializing, or just a week where we see the narrative of that alternative scenario increasing. You can already sort of measure then the performance of your trades in that week and say, well, I would have expected these five trades to do really well in that scenario. If that doesn't happen, you will see me asking lots of questions. You see me asking and kicking the tires on that trade again because, something is wrong then on our premises.
So we've just run through a discussion of those three themes, the new political paradigm, tech, and the US dollar. Hopefully that has lifted the bonnet on the asset allocation team a little bit for you. But we thought we'd finish with something a little more lighthearted. We spend a lot of time on the team discussing how we combat behavioral biases, those hardwired evolutionary instincts that take over when we don't think clearly. I want to bring some of those out to the fore by making you think really snappily in a little word association game. I'm going to read out a list of words, and I want the three of you to give the instant response that comes to mind when I say those words. So starting with Hetal, markets.
Volatility.
Always right.
Fascinating.
Recession.
2020.
Calling it after the fact.
Not yet.
Debt.
Italy.
Problem.
Europe.
Middling.
Disaster.
Mess.
Tech.
Frothy.
Hot.
Interesting.
Consensus.
Boring.
Loss making.
Essential.
Dollar.
Up.
I need one too.
And finally, a word that I think was invented by me or 2 years ago, teaming.
Fun.
What?
Fantastic.
So that's it. Thank you for listening to today's episode of Elgin Talks. Those of us wanting even more information can find it on one of the blogs linked below. Thank you very much and goodbye.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcasts app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookouts for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. And to find more great content from Legal & General Investment Management, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.